So I was told today that I'm supposed to talk about guru devotion. And when somebody said that, I said, "Ugh." I hate the term guru devotion because it's a wrong translation and it's completely misleading. Okay? The Tibetan term is Lama Tenpa. Lama is a spiritual master, and Tenpa means to rely or depend upon or associate with. So it really should be how to depend upon a spiritual mentor. Now, that sounds different in English than guru devotion, doesn't it? Because guru, we think, oh, some extraordinary, exotic somebody from Tibet or India, you know, who mumbles in a language we don't understand. Therefore, they're very holy, you know. And devotion means, you know, like you know, the teenage girls with the Beatles, you know. And so often we become like that with our spiritual mentors, you know, just like these slobbering little teenagers who are groupies, who follow around a spiritual mentor just like puppy dogs, you know. Lama, look at me. Lama, look at me. You know how there's that one prayer that goes, Lama, you know, but we don't do that one. We do, Lama, look at me. And then you see, you know, kind of the Lama walks in the room, and everybody's looking like this, you know. Nobody has bodhicitta. Forget bodhicitta, you know. But it's just, is he going to look at me? And then, you know, you watch who he looks at, because those must be the important people, so they must be the people you should become friends with. And then everybody's getting really excited because, you know, like at the spring teachings in India, you know, the Dalai Lama walks in and, oh, he looked at me. Oh, he looked at me 2 days in a row. I must be close to enlightenment. You know, I must be very important because the Dalai Lama looked at me. You know, and we get into these incredible trips, you know. And then we compete with other disciples. Yeah? We compete with everybody. Excuse me, but I'm driving Rinpoche to the teachings tonight. Yeah. Rinpoche always goes in my car. Has he ever gone in your car? And then, of course, you know, we have to be the ones to invite the lamas out to dinner. Yeah? So, you know, get away, everybody else. I invited him out to dinner. I don't care if he's eaten 5 meals today. He's coming out to dinner with me, and I'm going to stuff him. You know? And just, you know, kind of we criticize other disciples in order to get the Lama's attention. You know, Rinpoche comes to Singapore. What does everybody do? They make appointments, and they go and gossip and tell about what everybody else is doing that they don't like. You know, so that Rinpoche will think how good they are. I'm such a good disciple, but see, everybody else in the sense doing this. But I work so with so much dedication for the Dharma, such a pure motivation, and nobody appreciates me. Therefore, Lama, I should be your star disciple. Yeah? And then we lord it all over everybody else, you know? The Lama gives us, you know, some little red cord, you know, something like this. You could buy it at a 5 and dime, you know? But we go around, oh, look, Lama gave me a red cord. I am blessed. I mean, really, we're like teenage kids after a movie star. It's ridiculous, you know? And so when we hear the words guru devotion, this is what comes in our mind, you know? And we also get the sense, you know, then we hear this thing about you have to surrender to your guru. Yeah, you know, I'm devoted to my guru, so I surrender to my guru. So that means I stop thinking. Yeah, and I go in front of my lama and say, Lama, Lama, what do I do with my life? You know, and of course, since he's Buddha, he knows everything. Yeah, and then he tells you what to do with your life, and then, you know, you don't like it, so you go do something else. Yeah. But, you know, we get this idea of we surrender to the guru. And what do we surrender, you know? Instead of surrendering our ego, we surrender our wisdom. You know, we stop thinking for ourselves. We become like little infants. You know, is this the purpose of having a teacher, so that we can regress? Yeah? I mean, is the purpose of your having a teacher so that you can go consult your teacher about who to marry and how to invest your money? Yeah, I think it would be an incredible thing to do sometime. You know how these sociologists do studies? To do a study of what questions people ask a lama, you know? And how many are Dharma questions and how many are samsaric questions? Huh? And how do we use the talents and abilities of our teachers? Do we use them so that they teach us the Dharma? Or do we use the time of our teacher to help us have better samsara? Yeah. I mean, I just remember years ago, I was in Malaysia somewhere teaching, and one woman made an appointment to come see me. And she said, you know, 3 years ago, when, such and such a lama was here, and I was dating this one man at that time, and he told me to marry that man. And then the next year, another lama came, and I wasn't quite sure if I wanted to marry that man, and he told me, you know, well, you can choose somebody else if you want to. And then the next year, another lama came, and he said, you know, maybe I shouldn't get married at all. So what do you think I should do, you know? Should I marry this guy or no? I felt like Ann Landers, you know? How's your teacher supposed to know who you're supposed to marry? Is that the purpose of having a spiritual mentor? Yeah? I mean, we're adults. We're big people. We have to decide if we want to get married and who we want to marry ourselves. Now, not go running to a teacher. Yeah? And the same with business deals. You know? I mean, we're supposed to want to create merit, you know, but we'd rather create stock options, you know, instead. Forget the merit, give me the stock. And so we go to the lama, should I invest in this company? Should I invest in that company? Should, you know, I do a merger with this? Should I do a merger? How is the lama supposed to know? You know, he doesn't even know what a stock is. And if he does, you should be wondering why he knows. Yeah. So what I'm getting at is, you know, what in the world is the purpose of having a spiritual mentor? Yeah? Why do we need spiritual mentors? Well, supposedly, you know, we need spiritual mentors because we have a sincere aspiration for liberation and enlightenment. And we want somebody to teach us and guide us how to get there. Yeah? Now, we have to look inside of ourselves, and do we have a sincere aspiration for enlightenment? Good question, huh? Yeah? I mean, because the kind of teacher we're going to associate is going to depend upon the kind of students we are and what our intention is. And if we want to have good teachers, we have to become good disciples, which means we have to have a proper motivation. So what is it we want out of life? You know, do we want just, you know, we want to win the lottery and be rich and have a comfortable time and a good marriage? And, you know, what's the birth rate in Singapore? You know, 2.5 kids, you know, so you want your 2.5. I don't know what, you know, what you'd do with the other half of a kid. But, you know, what is it that we want? Yeah, and I think the question, you know, so often it comes down to us, you know. What is it we want in life? And do we need a spiritual teacher for that? No? I remember one time a friend of mine went to see Serkan Rinpoche. His previous life was His Holiness's debate partner. And this disciple was having many legal problems with the house that he owned, and he went to ask Serkan Rinpoche what to do. And Serkan Rinpoche threw him out and said, go ask a lawyer. Yeah, how am I supposed to know? And yeah, so this is what we have to ask ourselves: what is it? You know, do we want a doctor? Do we want a lawyer? Do we want a marriage counselor? You know? Or do we want a spiritual mentor? Because if we want a spiritual mentor, then, you know, we should find a good one and, you know, have a good relationship with him or her. Okay? But if we're looking for somebody just to make our samsara better, there's, you know, better go somebody else. Yeah? Yeah? So we need a teacher because we're ignorant. Yeah. If we knew it all, which sometimes we think we do, then we wouldn't need a teacher. So finding a teacher is based on an awareness, first of all, that we have a sincere aspiration for liberation and enlightenment, and an awareness, second, that we can't do it on our own and that we need guidance and we need instruction. Okay, so we have to have both of those thoughts very, very clear in our own mind. Some people really go to an extreme and think, well, you know, I'll invent the spiritual path on my own. You know, I can take a little bit of this and a little bit of that and a little bit of this and a little bit of that, because they're all good and they all make sense. Yeah, and I'll take them all, stir them together. Lama Yeshe used to call it making soup. Okay, so we make some soup of a spiritual practice, and then we practice that, you know. And we don't follow any teacher, because we know everything, you know. And we can do it ourselves. Well, if we could do it ourselves, how come we're still in cyclic existence? And how come we're still confused? Yeah. If we're so knowledgeable about the whole path, we should have been liberated already. So, you know, if we need teachers for common things like learning to drive a car and learning to type, yeah, we definitely need teachers for those. Then attaining enlightenment is much more complicated and much more difficult, so we definitely need a teacher for that. You know, it's not something that you can pick up a little manual, you know, enlightenment, quick, cheap, and easy, and read it, you know, 5 days your money back, and then there you go. No, but it's a difficult process, and so we have to rely on somebody who knows what's going on, and we have to be sincere in our own motivation. Yeah. We also need to be open-minded, and we need to be intelligent. Okay, so open-minded in the sense that we are going to listen with an open mind to the teachings instead of just saying, this teaching makes me feel good, but that teaching I don't like. Okay, because we do that one a lot, don't we? Yeah. Oh, I love teachings on love and compassion. I don't like the ones on the hell realms. So therefore, Buddha didn't teach about the hell realms. We have to be very careful there, okay? So we have to be open-minded and really willing to listen to all of the teachings and willing to spend a long time trying to figure out what they mean and figure out how to practice them properly. And sometimes we don't do this, you know. We hear the words of the teachings and we think that our initial understanding is correct, and then we practice that. But my own experience has been that very often my initial understanding of the teaching is not correct. And it's, you know, and I soon bump up into things and run into difficulties in my practice because I'm not really understanding the meaning of the teachings correctly. Yeah, and so my mind gets tight, or it gets confused, or it gets anxious or angry. And so instead of giving up at that point, we need to just step back and say, what does my teacher really mean when he's teaching this and that? And what is the Buddha really trying to get at? And so we have to put in time and energy to understand the teachings. If we expect our teacher to just give us these teachings that make perfect sense to us, and if we expect our teacher to answer all of our questions and clarify all of our doubts, we're going to have problems. Yeah, because how is somebody else supposed to answer all your questions when you have to do the work and try and figure things out yourself? Okay? Because I've noticed very often we run to our teachers, you know, a whole list of questions. And the teacher may give us a whole Dharma talk answering all of them, but it doesn't really change anything. Why? Because we haven't gone through the process of struggling with the teachings, trying to understand them in our heart, trying to put them into practice to see what they really mean. Yeah. And so hearing the words of an answer is very different than understanding the meaning of those words. Okay. Teacher can give us the words, and we've probably gotten the words and teachings. But to understand the meaning, we have to put in the time and effort, which means we have to have a daily meditation practice. Mm-hmm. Okay. I mean, just to give you an example, you know, a personal example. When I first started hearing about the teachings of exchanging self and others and cherishing others more than oneself and, you know, the disadvantages of the self-centered attitude, I had the idea that in order to be really altruistic, it meant I couldn't be completely happy, because if I were happy, then I was selfish. Do you understand what I'm meaning? Yeah? That if somehow I'm happy in what I'm doing, then there's some self-motivation in there, some self-interest, and it's only when I'm completely, you know, unhappy and doing something for the benefit of others that that's really altruistic. And so I was practicing like that for a while, and then getting very unhappy. Yeah. And yet the path is supposed to make you happier. And so, you know, I had to sit down over a period of time and really think, what did the Buddha really mean when he talked about cherishing others more than self? You know, does that mean you hate yourself? Does that mean you put yourself down? Does that mean you have to be miserable? No, it doesn't mean any of that. Yeah. That being happy is fine, and we have to have a happy mind in order to benefit others. Yeah. And so it was only through this process of really struggling with the teachings over time to try and understand what they really meant that I began to get some glimmering of it. Yeah. That process is not something my teacher could have done for me. Yeah. I had to do it myself. And really sit with the teachings and think about them and really go deep. And how's my mind looking at this? And how could, what my mind's thinking really what the Buddha meant? You know, well, if I'm unhappy, somehow I'm doing something wrong. So I'm not understanding what the Buddha meant. So what did the Buddha really mean? Okay. Yeah. So, you know, qualities of the disciple, like I said, sincere aspiration for liberation and enlightenment, a willingness, knowing that we can't do it on our own, that we're not big know-it-alls, being open to hearing all the teachings, being intelligent and spending the time thinking about them and examining them, and then having a very sincere spiritual motivation. Yeah. So if we cultivate qualities inside of ourselves that make us a good disciple, then we're going to be able to have a good relationship with a qualified teacher. Yeah. But if we don't spend the time transforming ourselves into a qualified student, even the Buddha could come here and we're not going to get much benefit from it, from him being here. Okay?